Hey, this episode of the Sex Nerd Sandra podcast is sponsored by the Art of Charm podcast. Check it out at theartofcharmpodcast.com and on Stitcher and iTunes. It's actually a top 50 podcast over on iTunes, packed with wisdom in the truest sense of the word, from how to become more productive and professional to how to meet and attract women and manage relationships, if you're in one. Topics like how to create confidence, how to get people to like you, how to get people to trust you, how to keep things fresh in relationships, how to create or end a relationship, plus, of course, productivity and time management. Basically, it's a fun and educational way to spend your time learning about personal growth, because it shouldn't be boring, should it? No! You might remember Jordan, one of the hosts from the Ladies Man episode early on in the Sex Nerd Sandra podcast. Check it out on Stitcher, iTunes, and theartofcharmpodcast.com.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hey, sex nerd, it's Sandra. Hi, welcome to the show. So we have a really exciting, intense interview for you today. But first, let me tell you a few things. Lots of upcoming events are happening. Los Angeles, I will be hosting Body Storytelling April 24th. Go to bodystorytelling.com. Phoenix, I'm going to be in you April 25th. I'm teaching a blowjob class. Go to sexualhealthexpo.com. There will be classes all day long, and I'm so lucky to get to go out and be one of them. Portland, I get to do a double whammy series of podcasts with you. I'm excited. May 7th, 8 p.m. at dantesLive.com. I'll be with Erica Moen, and I will be interviewing with her strippers. I have so many questions for people who take off their clothes for money. Really, so many questions. And it is has the most strip clubs per capita in the United States. So what's a better place to do it than there? And Erica Moen, Ojoy Sex Toy creator, she is an avid pole dancer. So I think she will bring a lot of really hilarious, wonderful, insightful questions to the table as well. That's $12 online. Just go to dantesLive.com. Then Portland, May 9th, I am at Bridgetown Comedy Fest. I'm interviewing comedians Kyle Kinane, DJ Reel, and Alicia Sanchez. $20. Go to Bridgetown Comedy Fest to check it out. It'll be at Kill Rockstar Stage at 1 p.m. Oh, we're going to be talking about Urban Dictionary, which is something I've been wanting to talk about for a while. There's a lot of things on there. Oakland, join me for the Girl Sex 101 launch party. It's May 9th at 8 p.m. That's right. I'm going to be in Portland, and then I'm going to be in Oakland same day. Yeah, I'm flying out just to go to the Girl Sex 101 party. You can find out more info at girlsex101.com. And the invite is on eventbrite.com. So come on out. $20 gets you a ticket. $40 gets you a book and a ticket and VIP treatment. And then I am going to Sydney. Can't wait. Still don't have an announcement. I wish I could tell you, but it's a little complicated. Going international, turns out. But I definitely will be recording in Sydney and will be hanging out in Auckland and Wellington with more details to come on that. And of course, I am a little bit behind on my podcast. I'm sorry for that. For those of you who stick to a schedule, I'm really trying to get back on track. So thank you for your patience. Oh, here's some fun news. There will be Sex Nerd Sandra totes available very soon. So we've been sold out of the Sex Nerd totes, and this time it will be the entire logo. If you want to support that action, go into Trader Joe's and other select supermarkets. Other than all that, it's been a really hectic period of time for me. I mean, I'm still struggling with trying to find the right medication. As you know from the sex and depression episode, that's been kind of an ongoing thing. And so I've been a little bit of a crazy person, literally, but I have a lot of support and it's been good. I've been working out, so it's been fun. Sex drive's been, coming and going, but it's like, oh, I'm horny today. That's fun. Oh, I feel like humping things. Neat. And I'm just really jazzed. There's so many opportunities coming up right now. Thank you to everyone who has been encouraging to the people and universities near you to bring me to your area. I will be at Stanford University in a few weeks as well. And I'm shooting a super secret pilot for a TV network. Of course, if you know anything about the way TV works, it might make TV, it might not. Either way, I'm just so grateful for the opportunity to try and create stuff for an even larger audience, I really appreciate your support, your patience with me, and the tons of love that I get from you guys. Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, wherever it comes from. I appreciate it. And thanks for letting people know about this show. This episode, I am talking to Charles Eisenstein. I attended one of his lectures, I think about a day or two before I interviewed him. I was shocked. I went up to him. He was surrounded by people. He speaks on authenticity and economics and how to be better to each other and just being a good human. And so he's got a huge following, and I somehow made it to the front of the line and said, look, I'm tired. You're tired. We're busy people. But if you can spare some time in the very short amount of time that you are here in Los Angeles, please, I would love to interview you. And he said, yes, And we snuck in a tiny bit of time, and this show is shorter, but it's also more dense with information. And I was rather nervous. He has an intense gaze. He's one of those people that have a lot of presence and a lot of soul. And so I listened to this episode going, Cassandra, stop talking. Cassandra, stop talking. Let him talk. Oh my goodness. And so I really need to watch that when I'm nervous around certain guests. I just don't shut up. But still, some things that he said were just, whew. It really was a conversation around sex and how it relates to world peace. Okay, enjoy the show. Thank you very much. See you on the other side.
Welcome to the Sex Nerd Sandra podcast.
Whoa, what are these kids doing in here? Hey, if you're under 18, go ask your mom. Now that we're alone, let's start the show.
One of the places I speak sometimes is the New Culture Camp.
Okay.
The first time I went there, I had no idea that it was like a polyamory, sex-positive oriented camp. So I show up there.
Nice.
And there's the audience, 100 and something people. And like, if everyone was naked, that would have been, you know, maybe I would have had a double take. But what if you go in front of an audience of 100 and something people and there are six naked people in the audience?
Oh, that was one of those situations.
It was hard to compute that. Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Hey, sex nerds. I am here with Charles Eisenstein, which is an impressive name just in your ears. Like, it's a pleasurable name to hear, but it's also the name of a really amazing an amazing author and what I think of as an activist. But apparently, Charles, hello. Don't think of yourself as an activist.
Well, I don't think of myself not as an activist, but I don't, like, really identify. And, like, you know, I'm not one of the people who goes out and does direct actions, you know, and is on the front line and doing stuff like that. So,
but you're doing the sneaky, like, up at the top, bigger picture activism.
I mean, I kind of see myself as a storyteller.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What do you do in the world?
I write books. I travel around a lot. I speak, you know, I lead retreats and things like that. But mostly I'm on podcasts quite a lot.
Oh, really? Have you ever been on a sex one before?
I don't think so.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, cool. Good. Screw you, Dan Savage. Sex with Emily. I also have Elaine Smith here. You have heard her on the Taboo episode and maybe a few others. It's been a long journey.
There was another one. I don't know.
Oh, hi, Elaine.
Hello.
Okay, so there's lots of things. So you go around, you talk, and several people, including Elaine, have told me about sacred economics, which you are known for,
right.
I get a sense of.
That's probably the best known one, yeah.
Okay. A lot on gifting economy, a lot about people reconnecting in our society that's so based around the dollar and like reconnecting the humanness.
Yeah.
That's what I'm getting a sense of.
I mean, it's weird. The gift culture stuff is the stuff that seems to resonate most broadly.
Okay.
Even though a lot of the book is kind of nuts and bolts economics. It's related to sex, though. Like, everybody knows that there's something, even if I don't necessarily talk about it explicitly, what I'm talking about is reversing a world of artificial scarcity. So I think that we have a money system that creates an artificial scarcity of money and an artificial scarcity of everything that goes along with money. And we also have a society that creates an artificial scarcity of love, intimacy, sex, and everything that comes along with that. And both kinds of scarcity had a common origin with the patriarchy. So there is like a natural alliance there.
Yeah. What was that? Are we talking about when we started to do property ownership and all that? Are you familiar with Sex at Dawn, that book?
Yeah. That's a good book. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I had Dr. Chris, I'm blanking on his last name, but yeah, Dr. Christopher Ryan on the show. Right. And we talked a lot about when the patriarchy started to like need to own cattle and people.
Right.
And then you had this thing where you just, it's my thing, not your thing. And the more I have, the less you have.
Right. More for you is less for me. That's kind of the motto of our civilization. And so much, so, you know, from that comes the whole mentality of jealousy, the mentality of control, of property, you know, that, and it's coming from the idea that we are separate selves in a world of other. So of course, in that world of other, if you control more, if you have a bigger territory, that's a smaller territory for you.
So this is this related to sex or is this related to relationships and owning the person that you're with? I mean, it's all kind of all together. But you're talking about in bed, we could change the world.
You know, I think, I mean, I think like any one of these, there's like certain key, like, I don't know, certain like leverage points. And I think sex is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you just change that one thing. I remember years ago, I heard I was listening to this CD on male multiple orgasm.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, this alone. And they were talking about how like the pleasure turns inward and flushes through you and like brings out all of the hidden wounds to the surface. I'm like, this one technology alone would totally transform the world. And I think the same thing, I've had that thought, you know, hundreds of times. This one technology, 100 different technologies, you know, by themselves could totally change our world. And it's like a more beautiful world is just knocking at the door. You know, it's not that hard. It's not that far away. Yet it's also infinitely far away because the incremental progress, the goal-oriented mentality of trying just a little harder, that's never going to get us any closer. It's like trying to run to the horizon. You know, you never reach it.
I'm more of a tipping point girl. Like all of a sudden it's just going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, it's like with recycling bags, how like everyone's like, ugh, you know,
right.
Don't bring your own bag. That's stupid. Only those people do that. Then all of a sudden it was really cool to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like multiple orgasms with men is going to like hit real hard someday. And then everyone's going to do it.
All
the
of
same
a sudden,
with world change.
Yeah. All of a sudden, like everyone will believe that it's possible. And once you believe it's possible and it becomes normal, then it starts happening much more easily.
So what is an ideal world for you then, where everybody is happy and perfect and no one hurt, like no one sad?
I don't know. Yeah. And everyone gets a lollipop every day. And what's that song that my 10-year-old was singing in the car to annoy me?
That could be anything.
Dancing on rainbows, pink fluffy unicorns. He's like that for like an hour.
Aw, he sounds darling.
Yeah. So,
yeah, that
I mean, for
like
me,
the more beautiful world.
No, for me, it's more like just, you know, I've had these experiences of heightened levels of authenticity, of intimacy, of kind of this effortless coordination of conflict coming to the surface and being held in a group container where you know that you're loved and it's okay to feel shame because you're loved. You know, like I've seen it. I know it's possible.
Yeah, you talked about love being an expansion that also encompasses the people around you. Like that for me, loving would be that you are also part of me. Is that what love is?
Yeah, I don't know. I think anyone who tries to define love is really asking for trouble. But for
you
me,
did. Okay,
like,
sorry,
one definition I play with, though, yeah, it's the expansion of self.
Yes,
to include another. Yeah, the expansion of self to include another. So, because once when you love somebody, then the logic of self-interest doesn't apply. Mm. When you love somebody, their pain hurts you, and their happiness makes you happy.
The way I say it on the show is, I say go team fun, a lot. And to me, Go Team Fun is to remind you that you're on the same team with people, mm-hmm. and you're hopefully going for the same goal instead of it being me versus you on two different teams. I feel like too often people are trying to play that game. That's the fun.
Yeah.
Fun.
And then, but here's like a deeper level of it. So like when we set up something like love as an ideal or non-judgmentality or, you know, positive attitudes towards sex, you know, or any of these things, part of the, I call it the old story that we live in, mm-hmm. the old programming, the story of separation, it turns that into like something that you can, that you have to strive for in order to be a good person. And if you achieve it, then you get to like yourself and approve of yourself. And by implication, those who haven't achieved it, they're not as good as you. So I think like a really deep part of this revolution that we're all in is to end the war against the self, which is also wow. the war on nature. And to be like, to have like a positive view of pleasure mm-hmm. is pretty revolutionary, because it contradicts the war against the self, that that well-being and virtue and morality and so forth comes through conquering desire, conquering pleasure, rising above materiality, rising above the body into some realm of, you know, reason or spirit or you know, pure consciousness or something non-material. And I think that that, that kind of conquest of the flesh mirrors the conquest of nature. And and what we're, you know, what we're moving though is toward a reunion with nature and a reunion with the body. And so I think that that the that's one, maybe one reason I feel aligned with the sex positive community.
I'm smiling because that's me.
Yeah.
That's us.
Right.
That's you listening, possibly.
Possibly either that or you put something different into your browser and here you are.
And here you are. Because activism, right? Neither of us are marching in the streets right now. But it seems like I'm working toward a vision of an ideal world where, to me, if each person felt comfortable in their body, in their sexuality, in their attractions, in their orientation, in their gender, all those things, if that were not such a battlefield, there would be so much more energy put toward much more healthy endeavors.
Yeah.
I feel there'd be a better world because of that. So I feel, like for instance, you said something where people bond or come together through joint creativity, not mm-hmm. joint consumption.
Right.
In the revolution is love video.
Right. Yes.
Yes. Oh, wait. No, he said it last night.
I didn't say it last night, but I do say that sometimes. Yeah. Like people always want community. Well, where does community come from? It doesn't come by getting together with your neighbors and, you know, watching TV or getting together. And most of the things that people do together in suburbia are joint consumption. And you don't get that much. They get, you know, go get drunk together, right? But when you actually create something together, when you create fun rather than to consume fun, mm-hmm. when you, you know, are in a band with somebody or you're all devoted towards something beyond yourselves, then you look at the other people and you know, yeah, I need you. I appreciate your gifts. They matter to what I care about. So I don't know where you're going with that, but
In terms of sexuality, I think mm-hmm. so often people think of sex as something where you consume, like with porn,
have sex
or a stripper or with, we are going to have this thing and we are going to do it. But to me, in the way I teach is that, and I tell this and I try to remember to say it in every class, is sex is a creative act. There are no rules except don't put that thing in your butt. Like that's the only real main rule is, you know, don't get something stuck. Other than that, it's a collaborative experience mm-hmm. that you're having. And I think that's a really important shift for people. It was important for me. I know it's important for a lot of people I talk to about it.
Yeah.
So,
and also you could look at that to like connect that with gift economy. You know, you could look at that as look at sex as like maybe not the most primal gift, but like a really primal gift. Food is probably the most primal.
Right, but it's pretty primal. But it's not like a give me a BJ, I will give you a cunnilingus, and we have transacted. It's like let me give of myself. Let me give. It's
and it's also like I mean the best sex is when you are open to give and receive both.
Yes,
and then in the giving and receiving, a third thing is born, a thing that is greater than the two people who are giving, or more than two maybe, but greater than the people who are giving and receiving, a third thing is born.
What is it?
There's something in Rumi, the poet Rumi says something like that. When lovers come together, a child is born. Mm-hmm. And it may not, well, it might be a literal child, but something happens because, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what that thing necessarily is, but...
But it feels so true. Connection?
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, two separate selves become a union. Mm-hmm. So that's a third thing already. Mm-hmm. And each of the two people, I think I talked about that last night, like when in any intimacy, like I talked about, you know, getting intimate with a tree. Mm-hmm. Not that I took off my clothes, but, but you know, like... I saw that tree like so completely as a being, not just as a thing. And when I went away from that, it had imprinted itself on me. Mm-hmm. So I no longer was the same person. I was a new person called maybe Charles plus tree. It was this like 2,000-year-old gigantic tree. So I think
it's almost like a chemical reaction.
Yeah. I mean, there must be a whole chemical level, you know? And I think the same thing is true with intimacy with humans, you know, like it's a profound thing. And sex, of course, it's not the only path to intimacy, but it's a really, really powerful one that I found even when I was like in college, you know, and very much, you know, using sex to bolster my self-esteem and to impress my friends and so on.
We have plenty of college students listening, I'm sure.
Yeah. Hey guys. So like, okay. So, and maybe acting like a total jerk yet, in all of those sexual experiences, a key was turned in my soul. Something happened to me. The gift that those women gave to me was not given in vain. Mm-hmm. Like whether I knew it or not, whether I was conscious of it or not, each one of those encounters changed something in me. Sometimes it might have taken 10, 20 years for that gift to blossom, but it kind of worked in me, you know?
Yeah.
And I think people, they seek out, the soul uses the ego as a tool to bring it what it needs.
Huh.
So like I tend to, for me, that might be a way to bypass some of the judgment I would feel toward, you know, people who are using sex apparently in a very ego-based way.
It's like, oh yeah, my soul needs you.
Yeah. Like there's something, it's like the people who go to yoga to get a firm butt, you know, but then maybe they discover something completely beyond what their ego brought them into it.
True. I used to do SGI Buddhist chanting, and there was that, like, you can chant for a car, you can chant for really, you know, just basic material things. Once those things kind of happen, like you start to get much deeper and deeper. Like people, that's always how people usually start. But then through that, they get to like such deep spiritual things that they is what truly that their soul needed. What sexually sell turning key? Oh, when I was in college and in high school and I was having sex, I felt every time like I had sex with a new partner, I was losing a piece of myself. Mm. And I think in what you're talking about, I didn't know how to receive or get what I needed in, I mean, a physical way maybe, but also emotionally and in the communication. And so I just felt like I was kind of, I just lost a little piece every time, and I feel totally whole now, but it was also a really negative attitude toward it. But it's interesting that you felt like something was gained every time.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not like discounting, you know, the sex addiction and all that kind of stuff.
I didn't say I was totally addicted. Okay.
No. But I mean, like there's certainly a lot of pathology, a lot of dysfunction, you know, a lot of violence, I mean, a lot of, you know, bad stuff that goes along with it. But there's something else that comes through the door when you open yourself in that way to somebody.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Necessarily, there's always something else that comes through. It's like a principle of the universe. We're dealing with, like, you know, powerful sacred magic here.
What does sacred mean to you? I was wondering this from your talk. The word sacred would come up, and in this video that I saw online, there you're talking. I'm just curious because I feel like people talk about sacred sexuality a lot, and there's this non-religious sacredness.
Yeah.
I want to understand.
Yeah. So, like, for me, for one thing, like, sacredness is like something I can feel. And if I try to define it, it will not capture fully what it is to me. But I know that it has something to do with. So, I mean, you might say, oh, well, everything is sacred, right? There's not some.
I don't agree.
Parts of the universe that are and some that aren't, et cetera, et cetera. But even if that's the case, there are some things that, like sacred sites on Earth. Mm-hmm. You know, well, isn't every piece of land sacred? Well, maybe, yeah, but there are certain places that are so, that whose sacredness is much more accessible to us, and their function is to remind us of the sacredness of everything. Just as there are certain moments in your life that are sacred that remind you of the sacredness mm-hmm. of all moments, certain experiences with another person, mm-hmm. you know, this person is a goddess, and that is an awakener mm-hmm. of the perception of all, of the divinity of all human beings.
Thank you for... Oh, wait, sorry. I totally interrupted, but there was something that I really wanted to say.
No, go for it.
I get really annoyed, and I know some people who might listen to this at some point will be like, oh, Sandra, you're so judgy. But sometimes I meet people who call every woman they meet a goddess, and that annoys the shit out of me. However, I think at the same time that if you truly feel inspired by someone, and you're like, you are a goddess, and this is changing me and bringing something in, totally fine. But I don't buy it. I don't buy it with some people. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's just an item of ideology, and they're not actually in the living experience of that person as a goddess.
Right.
So, but there might be that rare person who actually is, like, in that, you know, everybody I meet, I'm just blown away by because I'm seeing their divinity. Like, maybe. And, or maybe one reason it could trigger you is there might be a part of you that really doubts that you're a goddess. So when someone calls you that, it, you know, triggers that own, your own, I mean, who knows? I'm not going to psychoanalyze you, but.
Oh, please do. It's so fun. I mean,
well,
you have like.
I don't know you well enough to do that.
Oh, darn. In case that you get taken away soon, I want to make sure to ask you this very important question. Because at the beginning of this year, I made an announcement on my podcast because I was really miserable last year on being a sex educator. And I realized it's because I came into this by being a sex nerd. I really realized that was a title that made sense for me because I get obsessive. I'm a little awkward about it, but I overshare. There's a lot going on there, right? And it's curiosity driven, where sex ed as a field is very objective. It's supposed to be like you contain yourself and it's about the person that you're teaching and sharing with. And so there was this fight, internal conflict, right? And I let that go and I let nerdiness win at the beginning of the year. And now the sex ed is kind of coming back in a much more healed way. So I feel much more whole now. But you said something about at the end of your talk about how to let go of the expert idea and that we are all empowered to be changers and movers and shakers in this world. And I was just so appreciative of that.
Yeah, I think that's especially relevant to sex. You know, I mean, if your interest is in non-ferrous metallurgy, maybe you really do need to consult an expert to learn about it. But sex, like, not that an expert can't help, but I mean, really, literally, the knowledge is within you. And if you enter that place of play and exploration, you're going to learn things that nobody could tell you. So I think that, you know, maybe the next incarnation of the expert, at least in this realm, is mm-hmm. is the person who creates conditions where you feel free to play.
Ooh, I like to do that. What about in your realm?
You said,
well, at least in this realm.
Well, maybe not for non-ferrous metallurgy, but even maybe there, you know, like play is such a potent guiding principle in my life.
It so is. Oh, yeah. we should all hang out sometime. This is great. Play. When people without me mention that play is important, I'm like, thank you. Not enough people talk about that. Oh, that's so exciting. How is play important to you? Because I feel like I get a sense that you tend to hang out with in the economics area of things.
Not really. I mean, no? I wrote a book on it that was, that was published 4 years ago, and I've kind of moved on a bit.
Mm-hmm. What are you working on now?
I mean, really what I'm mostly talking about is narrative change, changing the deep stories of our culture, changing the mythology.
Right, like the ancient story that comes through when you're transitioning.
Yeah, things like that. Things like you know, how you're living in an old story and then something happens that demolishes your story of who you are, what's real, how to live in life, you know, what's normal. That falls apart. Some kind of crisis, health, career, you know, relationship. And then you're in that space of, I don't know who I am. I don't even know what's real anymore. It's just that in-between zone. And then from that kind of empty space, from that place of not knowing, a new story can emerge that gives you, once again, a map for life, gives you meaning again, gives you identity again. And so that process is happening to our civilization too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel that. Now, how do you know that that's happened? Oh, Elaine, you have, look at your face. You're so want to say something.
Is that a question? So in terms of the old story, the new story, the ancient story, in terms of relationships, sexual or just relationships, romantic relationships, do you have an idea of old story versus new story?
Yeah. I mean, the old story was, you know, kind of the patriarchal marriage, you know, the family in a box among other families in a box, sexual exclusivity, possessiveness, jealousy, like that whole thing. And I'm not saying that, you know, everybody should be in a polyamorous relationship or anything like that, but it's that, but, you know, not as a matter of dogma, you know, and we are in very much in the space between stories now.
Absolutely.
You know, that model is working for hardly anybody. And there's this kind of chaos now, you know, like, I mean, I have an ex-wife who I love dearly, you know, and but she lives 80 minutes away. And so, you know, we have to go back and forth. I mean, it's kind of chaos, you know, it's not supposed to be like this either. In this, we're kind of just getting by in this state of breakdown, you know? But you know, now like my wife and her are really getting close, you know, and like, I really love her husband. And there's like this kind of these glimpses of a new story. And I don't know what it's going to look like. I think that all of these experiments are really valuable in kind of alternative ways of living and relating.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I do a lot of interviews with people who are poly because there's so many new skill sets and ways of creating.
Just a second here. Dinner time very soon. Yeah. I'll be over there in like 5 minutes. Okay. Yep.
Thank you.
And reality is intruded on our interview, but that's good.
Reality is important. Food is part of reality. Yes. And that's one of the tastiest.
Yeah. So yeah, you interview a lot of people who are poly and because like, you know, it's an experiment. And I think there's been a lot of failed experiments where people are like, well, that didn't work. But in exploring new territory, you have to take those dead ends and backtracks in order to learn the territory. Like there's some saying, you know, I've learned so much from my mistakes, I'm going to have to make even bigger ones. You know?
Oh, I like that one.
Like, you know, like, so we're in this, you know, we're just kind of groping for a new story now. And so I really, you know, admire the, especially the ones who are doing really bold stuff, you know, like a Tamara, you know, I've visited there, I've spoken there. Like, I'm like, wow, you guys are balls to the wall, you know. It's an eco village in Portugal.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I mean, they do like really
deep. They put their balls on the wall.
Deep, deep, you know, work on authentic communication and non-possessive love and stuff.
Awesome. I'm going to have to look that up.
Yeah. Yeah. You should definitely look them up. I mean, they have a lot of, you should have them have someone there, you know, from there on your show.
I have a lot of miles. That makes me want to go to Portugal.
Yeah. They have a love school every year.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I want to go there right now.
Making me think of also the intimacy workshops they have up in the Bay Area. There's mm-hmm. there's a couple schools that are all about that sort
yeah.
of thing.
Esalen or no?
No, no.
No, like what was it called? Morehouse.
Yes, they have one of them.
Yeah, I mean, there's like people doing really important, and you know, each one maybe gives us a glimpse of the future. You know, and you're in maybe like, you know, even in that failed experiment, there were these moments where you're like, yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
This is part of the future. And once you have that experience, it lives inside of you and it makes the old normal no longer even tolerable. Hmm. It makes the old reality no longer ever seem quite so real anymore.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Last question. So much. How do you tell that the story is changing then? Instead of it being like, oh, some people just can't handle it. Like, how is it that you can tell within relationships, within economics, within just like the world? And what is the narrative worldwide that you're noticing is shifting? Like, how are you feeling the pulse of that?
I mean, I can't prove that the story is changing, but what I'm seeing is that the systems and institutions built on the story are falling apart. Mm-hmm. They're not working anymore. That's why we have converging crises all happening at the same time. They all have a common root.
I see.
The root is the story of separation. Hmm. Separate, yeah, human beings separate from each other, humanity separate from nature, and so on.
I love it. I like that we're here together in this room connecting over this, and it feels like, as an introvert, I spend a lot of time alone, and it's like, aw. I feel like we're being punk rock right now, fighting against the man together.
Fighting against the man.
It's like a Full House moment.
Yeah.
How are you, Elaine?
I'm good. I have sort of a left field question that might turn into something. I mean, it might relate to something from
there
earlier.
There is dinner. Just say it.
That's all right. We'll do one more.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just, that whole indigenous thing I'm kind of hung up on. In terms of, so I know you have like a lot of awareness of indigenous cultures. Intimacy. How would they define, or how would different indigenous cultures define intimacy? Is
that too I don't know. I mean, they might not even have an equivalent word. If it's part of the water in which they swim, they might not even have a word for it. A lot of indigenous cultures don't have a word for art. Hmm. Because the idea that you would ever do anything that didn't aim for beauty was foreign to them. So I truly don't know. But I do know from the people that I've spent time with who are, I'm not sure what indigenous means, but who are less fully modernized. Their lives have a lot more intimacy in them. Hmm. Even just touch, you know, even just go back a couple generations, like a traditional Italian household where as soon as you walk in, there's going to be a guy with you, you know, you're a man, there'll be another guy with his hand on your shoulder, you know, like there's like a lot more touch. When I went to Taiwan in 1989, 87, actually was the first time I was there. Like it was commonplace to see men walking arm in arm down the street and they weren't gay, you know, gay was hardly even a concept or, you know, schoolgirls holding hands. Like there was just like, you know, there was less separation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think we have a lot to learn from, you know, this is like, I almost don't want to say this sentence because it's such a cliche. We have a lot to learn from indigenous cultures. And often that turns into like kind of cultural appropriation, you know. And But, you know, as our story falls apart, we are drawn to alternative stories. Not that we're going to, you know, adopt an entire story of another culture, but they feed us and they give us a glimpse. Oh, yeah, here's an important piece of being human that we have forgotten. And we need to draw on this to create a new story.
Absolutely. I feel like there's always that moment, like in the anatomy books for medical schools, a lot of the structure of the clitoris was just disappeared for over 100 years. And now it's coming back. And so there is that time period where just some important work or discoveries just get lost and forgotten. And then it's looking far back and pulling them back.
Because they don't fit into the story. Like even our whole concept of what constitutes a fact, like what we see as a fact depends on the eyes with which we see. Hmm. And our eyes, the eyes with which we see are conditioned. There's like a lens in front of them that is constructed from the mythology that we live in. So it renders us unable to see certain things, like, you know, even the existence of a clitoris or you know, whatever else, you know, exists down there, which I'm not so clear on myself, but you know, like, yeah. So I do have to go.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
No, dude, okay. Where can people find you in the world? Just throw out your links.
The best way is my website, charleseisenstein.net.
All right.
Yes.
Excellent. Charles, thank you so much.
Yeah, this was fun.
Yes, it was.
Yep.
Go team fun.
All right. Thanks.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.